Hey everybody, real quick before we get this episode started, I just wanted to let you know that I am trying to fund a sketch pilot called Community Service right now on Kickstarter. If you go to communityservice.stolendress.com, it'll send you right to the Kickstarter page with the video, with the description, and with everything you need to know and what you would get for helping fund the show. I have a bunch of people who have agreed to help me do this for free. But obviously we need to give them water and food, and we need to rent out this single location that has about a million other little locations in it that'll help us make this look incredibly professional and do it in a very short amount of time. So the total we're trying to raise is $7,000. We need to raise that in 30 days. Right now we've got a little less than 4 weeks left. And yeah, so if you would go to communityservice.stolendress.com. Check that out, consider funding it, and please enjoy this episode. Hey everybody, welcome back. This week, Dan Schlissel is back with me. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me, Casey.
And for anybody who hasn't heard the previous episode you were on, we talked about Myron Cohen. You were the founder of Stand Up Records.
Correct.
You're out here for Festival Supreme, which I'm very jealous of. It's going to be a good show.
It's going to be a good show. I mean, I'm mainly here to see Triumph.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I guess there's a bunch of stuff that's been announced that I didn't even know about. So
there's just this insane lineup.
Yeah, I wonder how many shows they're going to be doing concurrently.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out, too. I know supposedly Neil Hamburger's doing a thing, a one-man tent, where you go in for 30 seconds, he either berates you or does pseudo-comedy or whatever. You get about 30 seconds with him, and then you're kicked out.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
I knew he was going to be at it because he was just in St. Paul last week, but I didn't know what he was doing. He didn't tell me the concept.
Supposedly that's what's happening. This is what I heard.
Excellent. I assume I'm going to get, because he and I are working on a project, a small, short, limited edition sort of art project. So I assume I'll get more than 30 seconds with him.
I hope so.
But I assume I'm going to get berated pretty well, too, for not being done with it yet.
So you wanted to do No Respect by Rodney Dangerfield.
Yes, the greatest by the greatest.
It's so much fun. It's so weird that a guy can, again, do so much material that feels the same, but obviously it's just like so incredibly tight still.
Ridiculously tight, and there's very few edits that you can hear in there. I mean, there's a couple where the audience just sort of fades out a little quick and the energy changes and... But other than that, I mean, and he's the victim of damn near every joke.
Yeah.
Not all of them,
yeah,
but damn near. Like, when he switches to talk about, like, you know, he was a quiet man, and or, like, you know, somebody who has no vices, and then one day they pick up an axe and wipe out the family. Like, you can almost feel the audience, like, chill to him when he says it.
Yeah.
Because he's not setting it up as he's the victim.
Right.
But yet again, though, it was a brilliant observation. Mm-hmm. And everything that... There's very little that's flawed on this record.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's really one of those key founding elements to my taste in humor.
Mm-hmm. When did you first hear it?
I don't remember what year it came out, honestly, but I want to say it's got to be like 82, 81, somewhere in there.
I think so, yeah.
My brother had a cassette of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it joined Delirious really quickly as like, oh, there's something going on here. You can get comedy on tapes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, it quickly became my favorite.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you ever meet Rodney Dangerfield?
Oh, I wish.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
My parents did.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. They met him at Deli's in New York.
Like, uh-huh.
I don't remember all the stories. I wish I would have asked my mom to refresh my memory, but there was like one thing where he's walking around with a challah under his arm and like offering it to people.
That's amazing.
But like going table to table and doing shtick at a delicatessen late at night.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, in a world that's entirely gone now, because, like, most New York delis don't exist.
Really?
Yeah. I think that Second Avenue, the Stage Deli just closed.
Okay.
Carnegie's still there, by the Carnegie Theater and Carnegie Hall. Second Avenue Deli is still in existence in a different spot.
Okay.
And Katz's is still on the Lower East Side. But other than that, like, the great, you know, kosher restaurant era of the Lower East Side has been replaced by hipster bars.
That's sad.
Yeah, well, you know, progress, quote unquote.
Sure, sure.
But as a result, now you don't have this thriving nightlife of all these comedians and singers
right.
that need someplace to eat food late at night. They're not congregating in this area.
Yeah.
And it makes it so that, like, a normal Joe on a night out or on a date can't interact with celebrities like that.
Right, right. I always get the impression, whenever I've heard anybody tell stories about him, every time I've heard somebody tell a story, though, it usually involves seeing his balls because he would walk around in a robe and with nothing underneath it. I've heard that story from several different comedians.
Yeah, but that's later on. That wasn't
that
like going
true.
Out after.
Right, shows. Right, right. Big star Rodney after. But like he, I don't know, if just from hearing just that one story, I can't tell if he's a guy who was always on or if he was a guy who really did love interacting with people more than a lot of comedians. I can't, you know, like,
well, I mean, I assume at a certain point, you know, towards the end, I from what I'd read, he'd gotten old and sad and just wanted to smoke pot and be left alone.
Right, right.
You know, but I mean, when he was on fire in the 70s and 80s, I mean, who wouldn't want to be the who wouldn't
for
want
sure.
that feeling to last longer than
of
just
course.
That hour on stage?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he jokes on the album about not doing marijuana. He only did marijuana once while he was on cocaine.
Right.
But he never
right.
seemed like a coked out sort of guy. So, like, you know, I mean, coke was the thing that the comedians went to keep that high of being on stage going.
Sure, sure.
I think he just went out and interacted with people.
Yeah, yeah. I you know, I don't really know or hang out with a lot of comedians, and I do feel like that's more of... I think there's that vibe out here, at least with the stand-ups. There are a few places where you can go, but it's not... Again, it's not like what New York was when it was, you know, when that was the scene for stand-up and everybody was coming out of
right,
it.
Right, right. I mean, you read some of Cliff Nesterhoff's pieces about the old history of, like, hanging out at delis.
Yeah.
And it really makes you long for a time and a place.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing I was wondering, too, is listening to this, and I might have talked about this on the other episode with Dan Back at all, but he... I cannot tell... how much of that shit he had in his just in his quiver ready to go, because he's so damn quick.
I mean, you know, he well, first off, I mean, that was when you were talking about Rappin' Rodney, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, I mean, you got to remember that he was Jack Roy for a while,
right.
And failed,
right,
and disappeared,
yeah,
and became a shingleman, which was what they called the guy who would hang a shingle
yeah.
and sell siding,
mm-hmm.
which is what Rodney did.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while came back with a new persona and went in. And when you're hanging out with, like, Lenny Bruce and Buddy Hackett and
right.
Joe Ansis, who was, you know, a legendary writer and apparently was writing with Rodney all up until he had died.
Wow.
You know, Rodney didn't always hire writers, I'm assuming, but I'm assuming that, like, all the old Tumblers and all that, they had an archive of people they trusted and,
right.
you know, bought from and worked with and knew their voice and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume he was fast and had a good quiver and had it well loaded by people like Joe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's one of those things where you don't, I mean, you don't see it anymore because stand-ups are not, it's not a necessity anymore to have this bag of jokes ready.
Although, with the latest, you know, all the heckling pieces that have come out in, like, the Chicago Sun or whatever, like, they're all, like, trying to get people to heckle again. It almost is like you need those tools in your arsenal
right.
just to be able to pound down the problem when it comes up.
Right. That's a little strange.
I hate that part of, like, people trying to bring that back into comedy.
I don't understand that at all. That's just all that does is ruin the experience. He essentially invited it and knew how to, he knew, you know, when it was going to come. He would practically ask them to heckle him and he just so he could
yeah, exactly.
you know, nail him again.
Where are you from? Wayne, New Jersey? Oh, you city slicker.
Yeah.
I lived in Wayne, New Jersey, so it made, you know, it connected with me in that level
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, everything, you know, like, but they're prostitutes. You're not prostitutes, are you? I mean, you know, if you are. Like, there's all these little things that he does in there that are just masterful and just so well-timed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it is really, it's a master's class in not one-liners, but, like, short-form jokes.
Yeah. And again, that's another thing you don't see as often anymore because I don't know what the expectation is from a stand-up if you're supposed to have much more legitimately personal stuff or what have you. You know, characters.
I think that it's an industry expectation is that you have to be kind of weird and tell longer stories.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and some people are masterful at that. Like, I would not put anyone up against Kyle Kinane.
Right.
I would not because he would destroy them because he's a master at what he does.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you have somebody that's as strong as that, or as strong as a Stanhope, or as strong as a Hedberg, they become archetypes.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And even Stanhope, like, some would say he's from Hicks's mold. Mm-hmm. But people become archetypes.
Sure.
And that becomes what, you know, the people below them become
mm-hmm.
and want to aspire to. So, like, I mean, you know, folks like Bronger and Kinane, mm-hmm. Hannibal, like, they have this whole group of people welling up to be them. And there's not somebody that's really Rodney Dangerfield-ish at this point with right. that level of success.
I wonder if people who are putting together, you know, plenty of people get to sell pilots and stuff, but I just wonder if they're looking more towards the people who fall into the jokey tradition, or if they would look to a Kinane type to even put together a sketch show.
I don't know that they'd know what to do with a Kinane.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
I don't really think they would. I mean, I think he's got some brilliant ideas that could probably be made
mm-hmm.
pretty easily, but I know that I'm an industry guy, but I don't really have a high opinion of the industry in general.
It's understandable.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that they're looking for the one thing they think they can sell on TV, and right now,
mm-hmm.
it's alternative comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not really looking for joke. They're looking for an element of weirdness.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. Not that any of the people that are coming up in alternative are bad.
Right.
It's just that it's shooting fish in a barrel and not really coming up in a club, which is the real proof in the pudding.
Sure.
You know?
Where are you from again? Whereabouts? Jersey? No wonder. I've got enough trouble over here. Don't you start now, will you please? Whereabouts in Jersey, huh? Wayne, New Jersey. Oh, Wayne. Oh, you city slicker. I'm in a good mood, though, I'll tell you that. I just signed a big contract with General Motors for 2 years. I bought a new car. I always get stuck when I buy a car. The salesman always says she's a beauty. He never says he's a beauty. And I found out why, because a car and a girl are very much alike. I mean, with either one, a car or a girl, how many times in a cold morning when you really need it, it won't turn over? What the hell? Nice to see the love in the room, anyway. Man, there's too much hate in the world today. People always fight with each other. It's awful. You know? The trouble with me is I'm too easygoing. And last night I had dinner in a Chinese restaurant. I opened my fortune cookie. Inside was a guy's check next to me. I said to my buddy, I got your check. He said, thanks. You know, I mean, it's wise guys. You take a little vacation. It's supposed to some guy who works in a travel agency. He told me I could spend 6 nights in Puerto Rico. No days, just 6 nights in Puerto Rico. I said to myself, well, I do myself days. You do whatever you want. Just keep out of Puerto Rico.
Do you get to go out and see a lot of stand-up in... You know, in Minneapolis?
Yeah. I just went last night to see Dom Herrera before flying here today.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean,
I know it's part of your job, but I'm always curious how much you actually get to go see it.
I usually go out 2-3 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, I try to catch everybody that comes through town.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, some weeks I'm just busy working on records.
Sure. Dom Herrera, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and he's another guy who, I mean, he was basically doing crowd rap, and somebody might say he was phoning it in, but he was sitting on a stool and funnier than most people have a right to be.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and just crushing.
Yeah. That's insane. Because the thing is, I wonder if there are people who are trying too hard to fit into this new mold when they might be just fine as a jokey comedian, or might be just fine as a guy who does a lot of crowd work, and that might be their strong suit, but instead they try to mold themselves to whatever we're expecting.
I think that's kind of happening a lot.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing a fair amount of that because that's, you know, the industry gets what the industry looks for.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many folks are being visionary and saying, I found this thing that's way different and I'm bringing it to you.
Right.
I don't see that like you do in the old days.
Mm-hmm. Do you, I'm just curious, what sort of Minneapolis comics, what comics are coming out of Minneapolis maybe that people should look out for right now? That you can think of.
That's a sort of a tough one because I think, you know, you don't want to give somebody publicity before they're ready.
Sure. That makes sense. That makes sense.
I like Chad Daniels a ton, but he's not mm-hmm. strictly from Minneapolis. You know, we're about mm-hmm. to record another album together, so I don't know that he's up and coming so much.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe undiscovered, but I think 3 albums in.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Right.
Really solidly a funny character.
Mm-hmm.
I like Dwight York a lot, who's a one-liner guy.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Maddock I like a lot as well, who's like one of the great bar comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he will drag it out of you. You know, but you don't... He doesn't have an easy time getting into a lot of bars.
Uh-huh.
Or a lot of clubs, I mean. He's a bar one-nighter guy, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's way funnier than that. I mean, I'm obviously biased since I have a label, so I'm going to be talking about folks I work with.
Sure.
So that's a little unfair of me as well. Tommy Thompson, someone I don't work with, also a really great bar comic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to trumpet too many more. Tommy Ryman. I'll give Tommy Ryman his credit.
Mm-hmm.
That guy is 100% dependable to pull it out of the audience. And, mm-hmm. you know, kind of a little nebbishy, like, Lutheran Midwestern kid.
Mm-hmm.
And just does not stop drawing it out of you.
Do you think... I mean, obviously, some people might look at Dangerfield's character and look at it as a little dated because it's a little broad. But I don't necessarily think it's any more broad than the stuff you're going to find on stage now. It's just different.
Well, I mean, when we use classifications like angry white guy to describe comics,
right.
I don't think like the put-upon loser is such a bad...
True. Right. Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's, I mean, he's broad in the fact that he can draw laughs from everybody, but sure. I think the best comics should be able to draw laughs from everybody.
Yeah.
I'm not saying water down your message and go from anti-establishment to establishment like certain late night hosts,
mm-hmm.
but I'm saying like if you can stay true to your vision and deliver and pull it out of everybody and you've tried and tested it across the nation in clubs big and little,
mm-hmm.
then you deserve to do what you do.
What's crazy too is like he's a master at the top of his game, and it's clearly this small club, but it doesn't sound like there's anybody in there who isn't laughing. It's just this wave. Yeah.
And I don't know how. I've never been inside of Dangerfield's in Manhattan, but that's obviously where it's recorded because he said it was his joint.
Oh, right.
So I mean, there's a home element there too. I mean, yeah, I love that he comes out and he starts singing.
Yeah, yes.
You know, like an old time showman, like Don Rickles. When you go see him, he still sings numbers. Joan really? Rivers can sing a little bit too.
Right. Yeah,
has an orchestra. So he comes out and he starts like the for once in a lifetime, and then he just immediately stops going. I can't sing. What am I doing?
I wonder if that character was cathartic for him, for if he did genuinely feel like a big fat loser for, you know, having to drop out of show business for so long and then pulls it.
How could you not? I mean, you give up your dream to have to sell siding.
Right.
How could you not?
Yeah.
But how sweet is that victory of when course. He comes back? I mean, to be star of films, to be blisteringly hilarious.
Yeah.
Like it just oozing out of his pores. How mm-hmm. can you not feel that sense of satisfaction?
Yeah, and he's kind of, you know, my best comparison. Every story that I hear of him, and just maybe even his style of comedy, he feels like some comedians you might compare to a rock star. He feels more like a rapper to me. Every time, you know what I mean?
I haven't thought about it in that regard.
Just if only because he has this older type of character that gets to be a little more self-involved. Rap mm-hmm. can be very, you know, self-referential. And whenever you hear about him, he just really loved fame. He loved everything about it. He didn't seem to be a dick about it, but he did seem to really just crave that fame. And like you said, kind of turned into this a little sadder when he got older, and it was just...
Yeah, and also the other analogy was coming from the street, you know?
Sure, yeah.
But I just love that record so much. Mm-hmm. It's one of the great regrets of my life that I didn't get to meet the guy. But, I mean, I know that when I would have met him, it would have been just like, yeah, whatever, kid. It's good. Nice to meet you.
Right.
You know?
Did you, do you have a... It's hard to say, do you have a favorite track? Because really, there's only two tracks.
There's two A-side tracks.
And B-side. So,
I have favorite jokes left and right. And, I mean, there's so many of them, I can't even think about it. But, like, I mean, I love that he starts with the song and just immediately gives up on it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just love it. We're like, where the hell is this going? Why is he singing? I love the, you know, I was at a Chinese restaurant and I got another guy's check. He's like, hey, I got your check. The guy's like, thanks. and he didn't say it with likes, but it obviously becomes Rodney says, hey, I accidentally got your check.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy thinks he's offering to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way to make that transition makes sense
right
when you're trying to analyze it, but when he says it, there's no mistake as to what the intent is.
I know, yeah.
And it's just those things where just the way he words it is 100% perfect. And
yeah.
I mean, like when he asks the ladies in the audience if they're prostitutes, and then like goes, hey, no, really, are you? I mean, like those, that's brilliant. The joke about the girl that he met at the Crazy Horse in France, you know, where she takes a trip around the world, when he found out how much the trip was, he's like, you and I travel to different places, basically.
Right.
I'm not going to quote any of these properly.
It's okay.
But it's just so wonderful and just so well crafted. And maybe you see the punchlines coming.
Sometimes.
I don't necessarily. I want to see. I mean, I'm like excited, like going, oh, he's going to take me on another ride.
Right. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like that. It's like riding on the Haunted Mansion. You
mm-hmm.
know, what's coming up, but you're just like so excited and happy to be seeing it again.
I couldn't tell, like, as far as, like, you know, the speed of it. Dan Backett all listened to Rappin' Rodney, and I think he said, like, every 6 seconds there was a laugh. Like, every 6 seconds there was a punchline and a laugh. And it's like, I just don't get how you... That's
a lifetime, man.
It is, but when it becomes a science, that's not, you know, some people, you know, it's not... I don't know. I feel like you don't see that kind of dedication anymore. I'm not saying stand-ups aren't dedicated, but you know what I mean?
I don't necessarily agree with that. Okay. I mean, I was making this analogy way before Louis C.K. Took it over on his... And he didn't steal it from me, but he just took it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a jazz musician works a lifetime to play an instrument.
Sure.
And what they're doing when they perform is they play that instrument for an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what a comedian does is the audience is the instrument. And sure. You're playing that instrument to get the reaction you want.
Mm-hmm.
And a true master can just show off, like, look at how well I can play this instrument.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da, boom. And there's a rhythm. Da-da-da-da-da, boom. Ba-ba-ba, boom.
Right.
Ba-da-da-da-da-da, boom.
Yeah.
You know? And it's playing all those different rhythms and still keeping the audience going for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that the fact that he totally... I'm sure nobody could have followed him.
Yeah.
That night, you know, not only was he recording an album, but he just drained that audience and he drained them in 40 minutes and he had them laughing all the way through. They didn't get tired during the set.
Right. They, at the end, they even sound very sad to let him go. Which
yeah.
So great.
I mean, I'm sad to let that, you know, when that record ends, I was like, that's the fastest 40 minutes you're going to have. And to anyone who has not listened to this record, I can't urge you enough, even though it sounds like you might be able to predict stuff, just go into it without any preconceived notions and just let it play to an open mind and be thank me later.
Right. I'm trying to think. Do you have another favorite Rodney album? I mean,
there's two other Rodney albums that don't live up.
Yeah.
I mean, there's another, I think there might have even been another one. I Get No Respect or I Don't Get No Respect.
Yeah, that's another one.
That's another one, and I can't remember the third one, but it's like him underneath the hood of a car looking up.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And I don't remember the name of it. I can't remember the name of that one either, and neither one of those shows it like No Respect does. I mean, No Respect is just the defining artistic moment in his stand-up career.
Yeah.
And it's just brilliant.
Well, at my age, I want two girls at once. If I fall asleep, they got each other to talk to. You know, when you get old, you get certain signs. I walked past a cemetery, two guys ran after me with shovels. I don't care about sex anymore. To me, food is exciting. I tell you what, me, eating has replaced sex completely. In fact, I had a mirror put in over my kitchen table. Oh, the other night I was embarrassed. While I was eating, my kid walked in. I grabbed my napkin. I covered my main dish, you know? Well, my wife had a mirror put in over our bed. Yeah, she told me she likes to watch herself laugh. I don't know. I'll tell you, I'm the kind of guy with me. I'll tell you, certain times I like sex, you know, like after a cigarette. Well, my wife is different. After we have sex, she never wants a cigarette. She says one drag is enough.
Was this one that you listened to on repeat just over and over and over again?
Oh, yeah.
Did you follow him to any other artists? Did he lead you to anybody else that you...
Well, I mean, obviously, you might be a little young for this. I'm not sure. There was a series of young comedian specials on HBO, and he was the host.
Mm-hmm.
Not only was he the host, I think he was picking a fair amount of the artists.
Mm-hmm. So Kinison, right?
Kinison, Hicks, Schimmel, I think maybe even Domerera.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it? I don't know if Otto was on one of them from Otto and George. But I can't remember everybody that was on those.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a cavalcade of people.
Yeah.
I mean, he took Dice under his wings. He took Kinison famously under his wings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, his taste became the taste, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
But I don't think he ever really got the full credit for it. Yeah, the DVD set came out, but I don't think people realize quite how influential he was.
Yeah. I know, like, Maurice LaMarche, who doesn't really do stand-up anymore, but has a huge career in voiceover, he's very vocal about, like, how Rodney gave him his career, just by sort of, like, it didn't feel like picked him out of nowhere and just said, hey, you're going to tour with me, you're going to open for me, you're going to do this, this. He was on a Young Comedian special, too.
Right.
So, just, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't, there's almost no quote-unquote, no names on those. I mean, so many people blew up from those shows.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was as important as Carson was, and it was a little different because he could put you on uncensored. You know, Carson could put you on in front of a national audience. Yeah. But he could put you on in front of an uncensored audience that was a little more refined, a little more focused, a little more adult.
And that was one thing too, is with that appeal that Johnny Carson had. You, like they said, up until the, you know, very early '90s, Drew Carey was probably one of the last guys who got to experience this. You're on Johnny Carson one day, the next day you've got a TV deal. You know, I feel like it might have been maybe a slower with these alternative comedians who got to be either as blue or just as uncensored as they wanted to be. Still, it's harder to appeal, but
yeah, absolutely.
Their careers might have been a little slower to go, but still, huge launch for all these
people. Have a big kick in the pants by having Rodney do that. I mean, that automatically made your bookings go up.
Yeah.
Not only financially, like, raise the price of it, but you'd get booked.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I saw you on HBO. I only saw you for 7 minutes. If you can do an hour, let's get you on the road.
Yeah, yeah. Is there anything that compares now?
Unfortunately, I don't believe that there is. I mean, I don't think Comedy Central does a very good job of promoting stand-up comedy overall.
Right.
And there's no... I mean, Shaquille O'Neal's trying to do it for the black side of things.
Okay.
He has, like, these all-star shows on Showtime.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I can't... It's Shaquille O'Neal Presents, and I can't remember...
I did not know that.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact title of it, but it's mainly black comics.
Interesting, okay.
Because he loves comedy.
Yeah.
I don't know who's doing it otherwise, you know, to that level.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot of folks out there plugging away and doing comedy, but I don't know who's really pushing.
Yeah. And a lot of them, like, especially, like you said, Comedy Central sort of, and it's okay, they're reusing a lot of the same talent. Like, Chris Hardwick's got a show coming up called At Midnight, but all the comics that you see on there are comics you see on everything else. And it's,
yeah, because that's, you have to go with who's contemporary.
Of course.
When we were kids, you'd see the same people on the Hollywood Roast that you see on Carson and everything else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have to kind of go with what you got, but the thing is, if you're not in their demographic, good luck finding an audience.
Right. Right.
And you know, that's can always be a problem for them.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, too, if it's a presentation issue, because I remember for a while Comedy Central would try the shows where they would just do, like, snippets of 5 or 6 different comics acts. Like, they just give them, like, 5 minutes or whatever. And it just always felt too scatterbrained for me, and it never seemed to make anybody stand out.
They never really have a focus. They don't... I mean, they honestly... It's just content.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be windshield wipers or some commodity that they're pushing. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that 18 to 34-year-olds don't care because there's something hip and edgy and they can tune into on that channel.
Right.
But I don't think that it's much more than surface.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think that... You know, I'm not trying to say that there's a market necessarily, because it's probably only 5 people that really give a damn.
Right, right.
But it'd be nice if those 5 people could curate something and
go,
hey, let me show you what's really out there and funny.
And it would be really great, because, I mean, I'm an asshole for living in Los Angeles and never going and seeing stand-up. I have no excuse. But there are people with no access who it would be great for them to get something the equivalent of a Young Comedian special.
Oh, I can think of a dozen comics easily who deserve to be exposed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I do what I can on my far end of things, but I mean, I'm not doing samplers. I don't have a TV network.
Right.
I have a record label, and I can say, look, I have taste. I have a track record.
Right.
If you like these other guys, try these new guys.
For sure. And that is where people should be turning, because there aren't, I mean, again, some place like iTunes is great to sell your stuff, but it's not a place where you can wade through and necessarily find something new.
Well, the thing that sucks is, like, you know, you have Pandora and you have iTunes Radio and you have SoundCloud and all these, you know, Last.fm and other tools that have gone away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I, as a label, can go in and say, hey, I'm going to create a stand-up records channel.
Right.
Here are my acts.
Right, right.
They won't let me curate my own channel.
Sure. They just want your content to throw in with all the other
shit. Yeah, so they can say,
else.
Let's say you want a Doug Stanhope thing, you can click Doug Stanhope and form a channel on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but, like, let me control...
That is so unreliable, too, man.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, like, I'm not saying that I want to pick the tracks and program it 24-7.
Right, right.
But, like, let me pick my 117 titles, and let's just go through those and pick stuff that's related based on those titles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I bet you that you'd get something fairly curated and serious.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, I on occasion, if I'm, you know, doing housework or something else, I might use, like, Pandora, and then I try, and but it just gives me nothing, nothing to work. And slowly but surely, I'll listen to Jonathan Coulton, and somehow develops into like death metal with about 10 tracks in. I'm like, how the fuck did that happen?
Well, I mean, you know, that is the weakness of having something like that.
Uh-huh.
They don't give you broader parameters, and it sucks. I mean, for me as a label, it'd be a great marketing tool because mm-hmm. I know it'd be an awesome thing for me, but it'd also be like, hey, look at these comics,
mm-hmm.
and it'd be good for them as well.
Right. Let's see. Oh, okay, good. We're doing all right. I had another question for you, and then we got on this other track. Apologize.
Do I have a modern version of Rodney that I could recommend? Yes, I do.
Yes, that was going to be my question, actually.
I'm going to plug my own guy here, but if you love that Rodney Dangerfield album, see Dan Natterman.
Okay.
More modern, more up-to-date, a little fouler in the language.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But, like, totally, himself as the victim, nebbishy, losery, hard time dating,
mm-hmm.
really hysterical. Yeah. I mean, some of my favorite jokes of the label as it exists now are on that album.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, I would recommend checking him out for sure, because it's a tradition that is carried forward through what he does. And I don't feel like he got enough respect.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Where's he based out of?
New York.
He's a New York guy?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, he was a lawyer and stopped being a lawyer to pursue comedy.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's the kind of dedication that, yeah.
Absolutely. That's awesome. That takes a faith in yourself that's unheard insane. Of. And he's so, so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I it does blow me away that some of the funniest minds I meet, you come from backgrounds you don't expect at all.
Yeah.
Some of them being attorneys. I happen to know a lot of attorneys. Some of them are some of the funniest people. And one of them introduced me to Ernie Kovac, so I can't really.
Oh, nice.
It. Yeah, so that's pretty good. So we were talking earlier about, you're talking about, there are only a couple rough edits on this album.
You know,
they're not bad. They're not as egregious as a lot of, like, club albums normally sound, you know, that kind of weird you out.
Yeah, like the old Lenny Bruce records where the sound quality was just radically different.
Yeah, you know, you're cutting with a razor blade, I guess that's what you get.
Exactly.
You know, but the have you ever cut old school sound?
No.
No? Never?
No, I never appreciated that. I mean, I've done it with bands.
Yeah.
You know, when we were in a 24-track studio.
Sure, sure, sure.
You know, but I wouldn't be the guy with the razor blade.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't trust myself.
Right.
But I've had that done, but on a comedy record,
yeah, there would be no
technology reason. Allows you to make it seamless, so why wouldn't you try?
Sure.
Now, I mean, don't get me wrong. I go back to some of my records and go, oh, there's an edit. That sucked.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've gotten pretty good at it so that those moments are fewer and further between.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is, like, I wonder, one of the reasons I collect these, and I'm fine getting them in any condition whatsoever, is I don't particularly, and this might upset vinyl people, I don't care about the sound when it comes to comedy. Unless maybe it's comedy music, but I'm not a person who necessarily gives a shit about the quality of vinyl. But I have to assume that there's something about it to you.
There is. I mean, the nice thing about comedy records is, like, you can almost tell from the condition of the cover if the record's beat to hell
yes,
or not.
Yes, yes.
And because nobody really respects comedy that much,
mm-hmm.
you're not really paying a lot unless it's something super rare.
Right.
I mean, I dare you to find a Friars Club album for under $50.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But those will always be a little bit beat up.
Sure.
But, like, to me, condition is the main thing. I mean, yeah. Sometimes if it's a rarity, I'll buy it just because it's a rarity,
mm-hmm.
and then hope I find another copy later on, which,
yeah.
if you hunt long enough, you will.
Sure, sure. Yeah, because I'm always curious, because I know there are people who don't want to hear that. That's not why. I get them because it's easier, and I can collect much more comedy this way a lot quicker.
Well, it's certainly, you know? A lot more affordable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I have two copies of this private press Jonathan Winters thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one I got because I was like, oh God, I could get it.
Yeah.
But the cover was falling apart.
Oh,
the
yeah,
record
sure.
beat to hell. So when a better one came along,
mm-hmm.
snapped it up, you know?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I once turned to crime, you know? I pulled one job and they caught me. I was so stupid, you know? I picked the guy's pocket in an airplane, made a run for it. My kid goes to the worst school there is. Only public school I know, the school newspaper has an obituary column. I looked at one class that teach the kids English. I heard a teacher say, what comes after a sentence? Kid, you're like, you make an appeal. That's where I live, in the West Side. I live in an older building. I live in a kind of building like I take a shower. I never get under it right away. First 5 minutes, I get rust. And while I'm taking a shower, if someone in the building takes a cold drink of water, I get burnt. You know, I want to move out of it. My wife wants to stay there, though. My wife, she can't do nothing right. Nothing. You know? I took her to the ballet. She forgot the sandwiches. She can't cook either. The worst cook in the world. In my house, we pray after we eat. What a lousy cook. You kid, I don't think meatloaf should glow in the dark. I got the only dog. He begs for Alka-Seltzer.
That shit's so crazy, though, that you can find that stuff now that previously people thought was lost.
The internet, man. I mean, yeah. If it wasn't for the internet, it was only what you could see when you went around digging, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, it sucks because it takes a lot of the, you know, fun of going to record stores out of going to record stores.
Right.
But, I mean, a good place like Amoeba or a million other places, you know, that do mm-hmm. do care,
sure.
you'll still be able to find good stuff.
Yeah. Are there any that you know of, like rare Rodney albums, or is it just, no? Just
it's the three and the single, and that's all I'm pretty much aware of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would think somewhere bootlegs exist, but they just don't turn up.
Right, right.
You know?
And comedy bootlegs, I guess, are still harder to find. Am I wrong?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've seen, like, a cassette here or there of a Kinison set. That mm-hmm. was, you know, a guy promised me a digital transfer. He sort of disappeared as soon as I expressed interest, though.
Yeah.
Which is weird because, like, you have a market. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, there's a couple of Bill Hicks things that used to circulate on eBay before people policed.
Right, right.
But other than that, no, not really. It's tough.
Yeah. Shit. Lost it again. So, of the people that, like, Dangerfield gave to us to, like, the Young Comedian specials, it says something, I think, that he didn't pick guys for anything like himself, really. He wasn't picking, like, the new Dangerfield.
No, he was just picking who he thought was talented.
Yeah.
I don't think that anybody said, that would have been a good reality show now.
Yes, yes.
Who's the next Rodney Dangerfield.
Right, right.
But I think that, you know, it was a different goal. It was like, I tour the United States. I find good comedy. I'm bringing them to you.
Mm-hmm. If you, you've already said this basically, but if you were to tell people specifically, if you've never heard this album before, you're not a big comedy person, why put this on your list?
I mean, everybody's got their own favorites, but to me, this has got to be easily one of the top five comedy albums ever.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm not to take away from the pioneers,
sure.
not to take away from the greats,
sure.
not to take away from people who sold a million or more.
Right, right.
But, like, as far as overall enjoyment front to back,
mm-hmm.
no matter what you pay for this record, you're going to get your money's worth of enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why I say that. I mean, it's... There's nothing on there that's so dated that, like, that it'll make you cringe at, like,
sure.
the language
yeah,
used
that's
or,
true.
You know, any of the sensitive words that we have now, whether it be a C word or an N word or an R word or whatever other word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of that's really on there.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just boom, 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 like, great working man comedy.
Yeah.
And hitting some subjects, you know, like... that would be a little bit taboo now, but still
sure.
really funny. Like, I have no problem getting ladies. I'm a rapist.
Right. I mean, there are things, though, like, when he will make fun of himself that are not just necessarily jokey. They are kind of deep in a way, because they are just like, hey, by the way, I'm making fun of myself for this thing. I mean, that's the catharsis of comedy, but he will get a little dark to just be like, hey, you're not necessarily alone, even if, you know, the rapist thing is an exception, obviously, but, you know, it's very
much
like...
Well, he talks about, like, waking up and just having heaviness sit on him.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And,
right.
I mean, it just makes you feel like, who hasn't been depressed? Who hasn't
right.
woke up and felt like crap?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's totally a working man thing in there. He is everybody.
Yeah. And he doesn't need to, again, doesn't need to scream about it. It's not pandering. For all of its, you know, again, if you think it's cheesy, you think it's cheesy. It still doesn't pander. It's not, for all of its insult stuff, it's not necessarily lowest common denominator.
No, he's the crazy uncle you wish you had. He's
yes.
the guy
yeah.
he's the guy who will grab you and take you by the shoulder and walk you down the hall and then, like, with his opposite leg, kick you in the ass.
Yes.
You know? I mean, like, it's all... He knows life is just a charade, and
yeah.
he's trying to show you that, like, hey, don't take things so seriously. It's just, you know,
mm-hmm.
we're all here for a little bit of time. Have some fun.
Right, right.
And I think that's what I get the most out of that with.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other albums that are high on your list because they are pure fun in the same way, or all of it? Is that what you like in comedy?
That's, I mean, I like that in comedy, but I also like the latest trend of being truth teller-y. Yeah. But I mean, I think Rodney's a truth teller too, because he's telling you his point of view of the world.
For sure.
So, I mean, like, I don't really feel like you have to be a real serious, dour, you know, type of comic to be able to be funny. I think that, you know, you have to show an honest opinion of what you think of the world.
Right.
And be able to do it with an economy and a precision and a masterfulness.
Yeah. Do you have, do you mind saying what your other ones that are sort of in your top are? Like, I'm sure they rotate like they do.
They rotate. I mean, like, that one's always going to be at the top.
That's pretty solid then.
I mean, obviously I like Myron Cohen because I've been on here to discuss him before.
Yep.
I love Joan Rivers. Mm-hmm. I love Eddie Murphy's first two albums.
Sure.
Brilliant. I love Jackie Mason's first three albums. He had two on Verve and then The World According to Me.
Okay.
Like, all of those are, like, nonstop, masterful. I like Rant in E Minor by Bill Hicks a lot.
Yes, sure.
I like... I'm trying to think of which Lenny Bruce record I like the most. I can't tell you because Father Flotsky's Triumph appears on two records, one edited and then one unedited.
Mm-hmm.
Whichever one the unedited one's on, that's... Like, I love that routine, like that glibness, that freedom. I haven't dug too much into Godfrey Cambridge, but what I've heard of liked a lot.
Yeah.
Another person like that is Dick Gregory, where
sure.
like, you know, it's a time and place again, but mm-hmm. I mean, I really appreciate that quite a bit. The first couple Lewis Black albums that I produced, you know.
Sure.
It just goes on.
Of course,
on,
of course. On. You know, I kind of, now that we're talking about it, I kind of think of, I want to know what Rodney Dangerfield's act was like before he was Rodney Dangerfield.
When he was Jack Roy.
Yeah.
I want to know that too, but I mean, I don't know if there's even any tape.
Yeah, right.
I would love to hear that.
Because if you were him, you might not necessarily want your failing self on tape. You might not give a shit yet.
Right, you know? Right, right. I mean, like, what's it like if you have killer material and nobody comes?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And another thing, too, is it's there's only one passing mention of his ethnicity on the album. And I find it interesting that it is passing because, you know, a lot of comics might delve more into their background and make a lot of hay from that, but he didn't really seem to care.
He didn't really have to, but then again, you hear that voice and that tempo and that pace, and it's not too hard to figure it out. I mean, you don't pick a name like Rodney Dangerfield because you want to be known as a big Jew. You don't pick Joan Rivers or Lenny Bruce or a dozen other ones, George Burns.
Of course, even Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks. There's so many examples of that where you just...
Sure.
You want to leave it left alone so you can just be seen as part of the mainstream.
Right, right.
And I mean, it's a shame, but at the same time, you hear that patter and delivery, and it's unmistakable that that's a Jewish comedian.
Yeah, who hands out challah bread and makes gags with people while he walks into a deli. That's fucking great.
Yeah.
Good God, that's amazing.
You
don't hear stories about it. Although I do know that Mel Brooks goes to the same damn deli every weekend, and I'm so tempted. I just want to hang out and just watch
him eat. I'm here,
and
it's a weekend.
Yeah. I can find out what the deli is if you really want to go.
We should not talk about that on the podcast.
No, we shouldn't do that. What I mean is, I really want Mel Brooks on the show, and I won't go stalk you and watch you eat.
Man, you're a legend, and I love you with all my heart.
Genius.
Yeah, that's another guy. I mean, Carl mm-hmm. Reiner, him.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's so many. Woody Allen.
Right.
Jeez, I can't believe that I didn't say him.
Who supposedly is thinking about doing stand-up again.
Yeah, but you I mean, a press release is one thing.
That's true. That is true.
You know, I mean, I would love to see him flex those muscles.
Sure.
But,
sure.
I mean, I don't know that he would expose himself to public ridicule.
Right. Right.
You know, not in the fact that I don't think he would be funny. I think that if he came back on stage,
mm-hmm.
it would destroy. But I think that there's a certain amount of baggage that he carries from his life. That
definitely
would be thrown at him that he wouldn't want to have to deal with.
That is true. That is true. It would be odd to see an 80-year-old Woody Allen getting heckled. It would be uncomfortable.
At the same time, I think he would destroy that person.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And
I mean, he, Those three records, you know, there are three from the old days.
Yes. Yeah.
Those three records are untouchable as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah,
I'm surprised
brilliant.
I didn't even mention those.
It's so good. I've got at least that one, there's a compilation up on the wall.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like that cover better than the other one.
I like the old school, kind of weird zip tone looking.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That one's actually pretty good. All right.
Well, this all right, I think we've bored everybody with our little insidery talk.
It's okay, but this was a lot of fun. What do you want to plug? Where do you want people to go?
I want people to go to standuprecords.com first and foremost.
Okay.
Come visit our site, buy some records, laugh your ass off.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to go dig for comedy records at any record store that you can find that's still open that has a comedy section.
Mm-hmm.
I want you guys to go to places like Rasputin and Amoeba and ask them to stock stand-up records in their stores.
That'd be good.
We're now carried through MVD, music mm-hmm. video distributors.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure to tell the buyers at the record stores that.
Wait, we can't get them in Amoeba yet? That shocks me.
Yeah, I've had the hardest time.
That's weird. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, when I go there, it's mostly old stuff, one or two new vinyl.
It doesn't help that I'm a Minnesota guy.
I guess not. I guess
if I was here totally
right,
you know, bringing meals and buttering people up,
yeah,
it'd be one thing, but now I'm making it easier for everybody. So ask your record store if you go to one, and if it's worth a damn, ask them to carry some of the stuff, even if it's just the bigger names.
It's a good idea. Are you guys Stand Up Records on Twitter, or
Are at Stand Up Records on Twitter. Yep. We are facebook.com/standuprecords, and we are Stand Up Records .com on YouTube, although that's kind of out of date.
Okay.
You know, hopefully we'll be rehabbing that semi-soon. We're sort of overhauling the whole web presence at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So
sweet. Thank you for doing this, Dan.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on again.
Please come back again.
Absolutely.
When you're here again. And everybody, thank you for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com.